The next case this morning is number 05-1706, Atrava against the Attorney General. Mr. Dixler.
Thank you. I'm Kevin Dixler on behalf of Coraline Atrava. This is an appeal from a summary decision by the Board of Immigration Appeals on an asylum matter. The court should grant Mr. Atrava's petition for review because the immigration court ignored its own credibility finding and its asylum denial. Several legal errors merit review by this court of the immigration judge's decision. Three issues contained in the appellate brief cover whether the immigration judge reasonably considered Mr. Atrava's testimony or even conducted a fair hearing for that matter. His claim is based upon his Romanian, Gypsy, or Romani ethnic background. The immigration judge found that Mr. Atrava presented credible testimony, but it claims that his testimony lacked detail and should have corroboration. If anything, the immigration court's decision was not confined to the record and contained inappropriate conjecture due to more to omission than a failed to answer the direct question. Nevertheless, detail seems to be a part of the record. If any needed detail is missing, then the immigration judge contributed to its absence. The administrative judge also had a reasonable opportunity to elicit testimony during the hearing and determine credibility and veracity, where she was skeptical of his asylum claim. The judge's claim of vague testimony or lack of detail is contradicted by her finding that Coraline Atrava is a credible witness. The judge skeptically speculates about Atrava's release from Tirupeshti police custody, where there are other possible reasons for Atrava's release, and those were detailed in the brief. The record contains significant evidence through credible testimony. Coraline Atrava details the attack upon him and his family. He details Tirupeshti police and the refusal to enforce the law to protect a gypsy because Atrava was labeled a gypsy. The repeated physical police attacks, the unwillingness of Tirupeshti police to protect him and his family, along with his economic persecution as a member of an ethnic social group, provide a basis for asylum based upon 8 CFR 208.13b2. Mr. Atrava testified that he was repeatedly attacked by Romanian police on numerous occasions while conducting his livelihood as a self-employed merchant. At times, the record is left in the form of a narrative, I'll admit, where Mr. Atrava continues to testify with the aid of a translator with little interference. However, the immigration judge rarely interrupts, even though she later expresses great concern over the need for those painstaking details on his injury. This record of alleged credible statements by Atrava should be noted as the facts merit review and remand, perhaps even a new immigration judge. Another finding, inconsistent with the testimony, is that the IJ claims that Atrava was unemployed. He testified that he was a self-employed trader or merchant for years. This is a 50-year-old man. He found a trade in Romania and owned a home in spite of being beaten up by police on account of being a gypsy. Yet the judge insists that the real reason that Atrava filed for asylum is for a job and that he was employed since
1990. What evidence, if any, supports that view, that this was economically motivated?
Nothing in the transcript, Your Honor, other than the fact that the judge was concerned about some of his past attempts to get a job in Bucharest and also the allusions by the assistant chief counsel. But there seems to be everything to suggest that it was on account of his social group, him being a gypsy, that police didn't act and, in fact, beat him up. These repeated attacks by Romanian police upon Atrava in an economic forum, a market, demonstrate grounds for sufficient past economic persecution on account of being a gypsy or Romani. It also demonstrates why Atrava could not secure any employment other than self-employment. He was identified as a Romanian gypsy, likely based upon his appearance and Romanian identification card. In fact, he testified credibly, according to the IJ, that he was subject to repeated persecution as a traitor on account of being a gypsy.
The IJ did say he was credible, did she?
Yes, she did on my appendix on, I believe, page 13 and page 12. It's on the record in her decision.
But you thought his testimony was vague.
What's that?
She thought the testimony was vague, credible but vague. Is that right?
Pretty much.
He didn't make his case, is her point, right?
Well, her point was that there were certain parts of the record that were not clear, but she certainly, as a neutral fact finder, could have asked those questions, and there's no indication that that vagueness is based on a lack of credibility.
There's some allusion made to the fact that she was concerned about the fact his wife didn't testify.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And at some other point in the papers we have, there was a divorce in this situation.
Yes, later on.
Later on, after the hearing?
Actually, there was something pending during the hearing, but it was not mentioned on the record, Your Honor.
I see. Did she ever ask at the hearing, where's your wife? Why isn't she testifying?
I think he simply said words to the effect that she just wasn't here or I didn't know. But she wasn't able to be there and she was unwilling to be there. She had come in October, well past the time that he filed for the asylum case. I think she was, frankly, irate, but that's off the record. That's not part of the record.
What?
Irate, upset that he filed the asylum application. She was afraid of the government as well. She didn't want to be here. She didn't want to be at the hearing.
I see.
Was any record made of that?
No, nothing at all.
So you're just offering that now?
Well, I can't do anything else. I can't do anything else at this point, Your Honor.
Well, the opportunity was at the hearing.
Well,
and that opportunity wasn't taken. It's not the immigration judge's obligation to develop the record for you.
Certainly. But under Georges, if you have a credible witness, then a corroborating witness is not necessarily needed. This is a social group asylum claim as an ethnic Romani or Gypsy. This position is obvious from the transcript. Also, there is an unwillingness by government to protect a Romani Gypsy on account of membership in a social group. In fact, the police even beat him for bothering them because he was a Gypsy. There is nothing in the record that rebuts that he's not a Romanian Gypsy, other than he didn't keep his identification card. The record refers to a 2002 U.S. State Department report, a part of the record that confirms persecution by Romanian police against Romanian Gypsies. The government planned to monitor abuse of Gypsies, but there is nothing to prove that it had much success in persecuting Romanian police for misconduct against Gypsies.
Did the IJ say anything about the sequence of departure of this family from Romania? Did she mention it at all?
Certainly it was part of the record, and there was mention about the fact, why didn't he apply for asylum, but we're not talking about the Shah of Iran here. I mean, the government of the United States was not going to grant asylum to him right then and there at the embassy.
Well, my point is he leaves, the wife leaves, the girls are still there, as far as we know, is that right?
The girls were in Satu Mare. They were 40 kilometers away, hidden away at the grandparents' house.
If the reason you're leaving is that you can't get protection for your daughters. Seems a little strange that you leave them behind and take off.
A B-2 visa would not be available for an entire family. There would clearly be immigrant intent. The U.S. Embassy would never grant a visa to an entire family. In fact, they deny everybody in the group. There's a presumption of immigrant intent under INA 214B. When somebody comes into the door at the Immigration Service, he had to get out of there, he had to make his claim, he had to get the family out. I'm working to my rebuttal, so I just wanted to let the court know. I would like to reserve the time.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon. We'll hear now from Mr. Driscoll.
Good morning. May it please the court, Kevin Driscoll on behalf of Respondent Alberto R. Gonzalez.
What about that? What would have been the response of our government if the applicant here had showed up at the United States consulate and said, look, I'm applying for asylum, and here's all four of us. We've got to get out of here. Here's what's going on.
Well, the question
I've... Monroe wants to sell my daughters into prostitution, and the government won't protect me because of my ethnic background.
The question, I believe, is well posed, but I think it's more correctly posed to Mr. Otrava as to why he did not do that, because he never developed the record that he did.
He gave me an answer. He said the door would have been slammed in his face, and I'm asking you, is that true?
I don't believe it would, although it's a counterfactual, because if he had filed for asylum, the asylum claim could have been at least been considered. He made no attempt to even develop that record, and I would note that in his asylum application that he filed with the assistance of counsel once he came to the United States, significant amounts of the record that was only revealed at the IJ hearing was also left off.
Of course, these folks' experience with organized government is somewhat different than yours or mine.
Conceded, Your Honor, but I do believe that it nevertheless is incumbent upon Mr. Otrava to avail himself of the opportunities to file for asylum when, in fact, that opportunity was available to him.
If I may switch your focus for a moment, I am concerned about this remark of the district of the IJ that this fellow came to the country out of economic motivation, was seeking a better economic life for himself and his family. I just don't see where the record supports that.
At Administrative Record 270 and 271, Your Honor, Mr. Otrava was asked point blank if he was unemployed, and the answer was, in fact, yes. While he did, in fact, engage in the practice of selling items for a particular gentleman, the gentleman who then helped him come into the country, at fairs around Romania, he acknowledged that he had no steady employment beyond these sort of catch-as-catch-can fairs. The immigration judge at the hearing also inquired about his travels to Hungary, which he testified he lived about 12 miles away from the border, and he was asked point-blank at the hearing if he ever made an effort to look for work in Hungary, even though he made several trips across the border as the hearing developed. Mr. Otrava acknowledged that he made no effort whatsoever to seek employment in Hungary because, by his testimony, the conditions there were the same in Romania, which is to say employment was not available to him. Unemployment was very high, as he testified on the record.
Do you have any other reasons for making those trips to Hungary?
On one instance, the one instance developed on the record is he was, I don't know what the Hungarian equivalent is, but he was requested or subpoenaed to come and testify in a criminal proceeding regarding a car theft ring. I don't have the exact page citations to the record, but that was at least one of the reasons why, for the several crosses of the Hungarian-Romanian border.
Counsel suggests that there really isn't anything to back up that comment of the district courts, rather the IJ, about about economic motivation, and you think we could rely on things you've just mentioned then?
I think you can, but I also think that the IJ developed the record in other areas with respect to, I think, a point that Mr. Otrava concedes in his brief. Mr. Otrava, in his own brief at page 18, says the testimony before the IJ was incomplete and lacking in sufficient detail at times. And I think, as Judge Sykes pointed out, the immigration judge made a determination, despite refusing to make an adverse credibility determination, found that Mr. Otrava had failed to carry his burden, that he met the requirements for asylum, that he met the definition of a refugee under the terms of the Act.
Did he specify exactly what kind of evidence was expected that didn't show up?
I believe the IJ relied on the fact that under the Act and under this circuit's case law, I'm thinking of the Dragovan case and numerous others, that the testimony has to be specific and sufficiently detailed to support the claim. The IJ in this case found that while Mr. Otrava's testimony was not incredible, he had failed to adduce sufficient detail to...
Did she detail the detail? I mean, what was she looking for that wasn't there?
She was looking for, in the first instance, evidence that the beating or the treatment that he received at the hands of the police on that night in March 2002 rose to the level of persecution. She notes that in his description of the events, he mentions no specific medical injuries, that he did not seek medical care, and while it's reasonable that he wanted to get out of a situation he perceived as threatening, it's certainly not unreasonable for her to expect that he might introduce affidavits or testimony of persons who saw him. His wife was the only person who witnessed both the threat by the fellow gypsies who were threatening to go after Mr. Ochava's daughters and the first person who encountered him when he came back from the police station.
It's apparently some issue now as to whether she was really ready, willing, and able to testify.
Well, certainly if she was unwilling to testify, surely an affidavit could have been in order. It would have spared her the difficulty or the inconvenience of coming in.
She apparently wasn't terribly ready and willing to give an affidavit. She She didn't want to talk to anybody who had a shield in his hand or in his pocket.
Understood. I would also note, however, that in the Hussein case, where this court found that in where a immigrant or a petitioner for asylum is in regular contact with persons in his or her home country, as the record does indicate here, that Mr. Ochava testified on several occasions that he had talked to a nephew or an aunt or a relative back in Romania, that he could have perhaps been able to obtain affidavits that would support his version of events from those individuals who did not express a fear or a suspicion of the authorities in this case. And I think that the IJ was well within her authority to do that. Judge Ripple, as you yourself wrote in the Balogun case, corroboration can be important when, for any reason, the IJ determines the testimony of the petitioner, while not mendacious, cannot be accepted at face value. It's not necessary to determine that the petitioner has lied in order to decline to accept that person's version of events. And I think that's exactly what the IJ did here. She gave Mr. Ochava an opportunity to carry his burden, but found that while his testimony was not incredible, he had failed to carry that burden forward.
You know what, really, all that's true, but then what bothers me about this is it sounds like we're holding our Romanian applicant here to a higher standard than we're holding the IJ, because the IJ's decided this guy was looking for a better job. And when you look at the evidence upon which she relied to come to that conclusion, there's not an awful lot there that's very hard.
I do believe that
what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And, I mean, she's a judicial officer. It seems to me, make a finding of fact, you'll be able to support it.
I would note two things about that, Judge. In the first instance, I would note that the issue of economic persecution was never brought from the IJ to the BIA. The briefing before the BIA mentions nothing about economic persecution. In the second instance, I believe the economic motivation for coming to the country was but one element of Judge John Bastiani's decision in this case. I think the bulk of her determination was based on the fact that there was just not a sufficient development of the record sufficient to make out Mr. Ochava's case that he had been persecuted in these particular instances. And I think for that reason, I think she was well within her discretion. I don't think that the evidence compels the contrary conclusion, which is the standard that this court must review that determination under. And specifically, I direct the court's attention to the Dandan case, which is cited by Mr. Ochava in his reply brief. And in the Dandan case, this circuit ruled that a Lebanese Christian who had been abducted and beaten and held for 3 days without food by Syrian nationals during the Lebanese Civil War had not made out a case of persecution under the Act. The treatment that Mr. Ochava received, while deplorable, does not rise to the level of the treatment received by the petitioner in Dandan. And this court held in Dandan that persecution was not established. And I would note that in Dandan as well, the court made an affirmative finding that the petitioner was credible. I think that's different than what the IJ did here, which is merely found that Mr. Ochava's testimony was not incredible. And your Judge Ripple, your opinion in the Balogun case, which I just cited, I think highlights the importance of that distinction, the distinction between declining to make an adverse credibility determination and making an affirmative finding that the petitioner's testimony is credible.
Mr. Ochava was invited to explain or offer an explanation for the absence of corroboration evidence, and in particular to explain why his wife was not present to testify or had not submitted an affidavit.
Yes.
And he didn't offer the explanation that he's offering now. He specifically testified that she just wasn't asked to come. He didn't offer the explanation of the two being separated or the wife being angry at him for filing for asylum, etc.
That's at page 273 of the administrative record, Judge Sykes, yes. And the judge specifically moved to develop that record, and Mr. Ochava had no response. And I see that my time has run out. I would note that given the highly deferential standard of review, while Mr. Ochava may have an alternate explanation or an alternate theory of the evidence, this court must find that the evidence compels an alternate conclusion before it can reverse. I urge the court to deny the petition and affirm the finding of the BIA below. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Driscoll. Mr. Dixler has how much time left? 2 minutes.
Counsel points out that there was a brief and casual trips to markets and things like that, but the record under page 263 to 265, that's a certified record, does show that he was regularly going to fairs. I can't see how a person could support himself, his family, and a home periodically going to fairs. I think there's a little more involved here. He was a self-employed merchant. Moving on, there was a statement about Hungary. In that case, he said that he could. The government has said that he could somehow work in Hungary, and that. But there was the same condition in that he was a gypsy, and there's also prejudice against gypsies in Hungary as well. So I think the same condition he was referring to is the fact that he was a gypsy, still unable to get work on account of his background. There are other concerns that we had, and the whole idea of the judge sitting and making a decision is important. I think that when a judge is going to make a decision, they need to base it on the transcript. If they see that there's facts missing, they can't jump to conclusions about the extent of injuries. In this case, the judge did jump to conclusions about the injuries, made statements that they weren't sufficient, when in fact no questioning was done and no effort was made to determine the veracity. Should he have mentioned that his leg or arm was injured? There was no effort on the court to do that, and I express concern. The fact finder, in addition to that, I mentioned Georges earlier, and basically it says that corroborating evidence is necessary to bolster an otherwise unconvincing case. But when an asylum applicant testifies credibly, he need not provide corroborating evidence in order to sustain his burden of proof. That's on page 969 of Georges versus Ashcroft, 328 F3rd 962.
What do you say about the fact that no explanation was given for the wife's absence when the matter apparently was raised by the IJ?
I think that there could have been more detail there, but certainly there was no effort on the part of to explore that. But again, it's corroborating evidence, and if the judge finds the witness credible, I don't know that the wife necessarily should need to testify. Affidavits are hearsay. They are only given a certain amount of weight in immigration court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Dixler. Thank you, Mr. Driscoll. The case will be taken under advisement.